Let's begin the Gemara again from what we were up to, which is Cholam u'Mishamshehem. Last week we began to learn the sugya of Chole, and kind of I decided to take it in the direction of categories of Chole for Shabbos, and we ended up Matzakanes Averin. Who would have thunk that actually Zoe got a real shayla, that's Sakanas Aver. And so you have to know the dinim. You should know when I first became the rabbi in Mount Sinai. So I asked Rav Schechter, what do I need to learn? So he said, oh, a rabbi has to know like the halachos of Chol Pekuach Nefesh on Shabbos. The first Magen Avraham writes in Shin Chav Ches, in the Sigya, in the Simen of Pekuach Nefesh, that he quotes Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi writes, Hanish'al ha'reisa shofech damim, right? In other words, the one who has the question asked to is a shofech damim, in the sense of if the rabbi doesn't teach the people what not to ask, right? You have to educate people when not to ask a shayla. Like, get on the phone, call the ambulance, and go. Right? I don't want to be getting a shayla, Rabbi, am I supposed to go? I have an artery and it's bleeding, and maybe it's not so bad. I just feel a little bit lightheaded, and the color red is my favorite. Yeah, you don't want that shayla, right? Just go to the hospital. So hanisha. So it's very important to know these dinim, and it turned out, I wouldn't say Baruch Hashem that the case came up, but on some level it is kind of funny, like you noted, that the actual shayla that we learned about came up in real life last week, but that just reinforces the importance of knowing these dinims. Now let's go back to the sukkah angle. Cholem are pater from sukkah. The Mishnah says, Tana rabbanan, afilu chola means not only chola sheyesh bo sakana, even chola she'ein bo sakana, and even what we would call in halacha a mechush, even if you have just some discomfort, you are still exempt from sukkah. And not only are you exempt from sukkah, but the mishamshim of the chola are exempt from sukkah, those who are assisting the chola. And what we, I believe, explained last time is that this simple reading of this Gemara, or the intuitive understanding, is that the chola is exempt from sukkah because the chola is a mitztayer. The chola is uncomfortable. And the mishamshim, those who are taking care of the chola, are exempt because they are osek b'mitzvah, pater min ha-mitzvah. So when I encounter this halacha of cholem u'mishamshehem, or exempt from sukkah, it's basically a way of bringing everything together. I think this is the intuitive understanding of the sugya. Amar Rashbag, Mirshim Gamliel says, Pamachas, Chashti be'enai be'kesri, v'hiti Reb Yossi b'ribi, lishanani u'misham shai, chutz v'sukkah. Rashbag says, at one time, I had a headache, and Reb Yossi b'ribi, Rashi says that b'ribi means he's the gadol hadar. He said that I and the mishamshim can sit outside of the sukkah. What we commented last time, which I still think is correct, even though a week has passed, is that you get an impression from over here that you're mekayim the mitzvah of bikur cholem, even for someone who has a mechush. Right? The real person who fulfills the mitzvah of bikur cholem is not the person who just shows up in the hospital and like waves, how are you doing? The real bikur cholem is you assist the chola, you make the person feel better. The fact that Rashbag and his attendants were exempt from sukkah indicates that the attendants are fulfilling the mitzvah of bikur cholem, even though it's a chash berosho, even though it's just a headache, there still is an element of bikur cholem. Okay, let's go on. Rav Shara l'Rav Acha Baradula l'Magna b'Kilta b'Sukkah Mishum Baki. May Rav permitted Rav Acha Baradula to sleep in a kilta. A kilta is like some sort of canopy. the canopy inside the sukkah means that you're not mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah because there's like a tefach on top or something. Tosfos comments that even though there are authorities earlier in the Gemara that that you do fulfill the mitzvah when you are in a canopy inside the sukkah, nonetheless, as a matter of halachah paskin, you don't get the mitzvah of sukkah. And Rav Acha Baradullah was told that he could sleep in this canopy because there are baki around. What are baki?
Any of you, little bugs?
Little bugs specifically? I think Rashi uses a term over here, a French term, sinslish, which I believe means spiders. Right? Any of you ever saw the movie Anacrophobia? Like, this was whatever. Okay. These bring back very bad memories from my childhood. But the point is that there were like some spiders around. So Rav tells Rav Acha that he could sleep in a canopy because of the spiders. Meaning, l'cha'ora, that that's a din of mitzta'er. Right? L'cha'ora, this is a halacha of that mitzta'er, when you're uncomfortable, you're exempt from sukkah. He's not ill, right? He's just uncomfortable. Rava, Sharle le Rav Acha bar Ada le Migna bar Mital Alto, Mishum Sircha de Gargishta. Rava told Rav Acha bar Ada that he could sleep outside the sukkah because there was a smell of, they put like some white tar outside of the sukkah. Apparently they're like doing some construction and the stuff smelled really bad. So because of that, he was able to sleep outside of the sukkah because this is called a mitzta'er. This is called someone who's uncomfortable and is exempt from sukkah. And the Gemara says, Rav la taime, damar Rav mitzta'er, pater min ha-sukkah. Rav is l'shitaso, that Rav told us that mitzta'er is pater min ha-sukkah. I'll come back to this in 2 minutes. I just want to get to the two dots first. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean that mitzdayer is exempt from a sukkah? V'anantnan cholem u'misham sheyem p'tur min ha-sukkah. Chole in mitzdayer lo. Our Mishnah says that only a chole is exempt from a sukkah. That sounds like a chole is exempt, but a mitzdayer is not exempt. So the Gemara answers, that what? Amri chole hu umisham shel piturin. Mitzta'er hu pater misham shavlo. When it comes to a chole, the assistants of the chole are also exempt. Those who attend to the chole are also exempt from the sukkah. But by mitzta'er, those who attend to the chole are not exempt. Those who attend to the mitzta'er are not exempt from sukkah. Apparently the idea is, again, if we're correct, that the reason why the mishamshim are exempt from sukkah is because of osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. So if you're sick and I help you, I'm doing a mitzvah. I'm doing a mitzvah bikur cholam. I'm helping you. But let's say you're not sick. Let's say you are, you're annoyed by something. Right? There's like a bad smell. So I'm not exempt from sukkah because there's a bad smell for you. That's the basic idea that our Gemara is saying, that the chola and the mishamshim are exempt from sukkah, but the but mitzta'er is not exempt from sukkah. That's what the Gemara says. Jasmine?
Yeah, something I'm curious about is whether that's because being mitzta'er is subjective, that like, I don't mind that smell, but someone else does mind that smell, or because the assumption is that you're like the mishamsha will be in a different sukkah, and so they wouldn't be mitzta'er in their sukkah, but they don't have to like leave their sukkah to come help you because you are in an uncomfortable sukkah.
Right. So that's a very good question. I think the answer is the former. I think the answer is that when we talk about mitzta'er over here, We're talking about something that annoys me, but it doesn't annoy you. Everyone, each of us has like a different tolerance level. There are certain people who drive me absolutely nuts, but they might not make you crazy. So those people are mitzta'er me, and not mitzta'er you. Everyone has a different level of tolerance, etc.
Rabbi Schwartz?
Yeah. Yes.
I think you have two more questions. I was terrified of the movie Arachnophobia and couldn't watch it. It was too scary.
That was a comment, not a question, but okay, yes.
I'm just throwing that in there. We previously had a case of if your sukkah materials are made of something that smells bad, you're not allowed to use them for schach. So would that fit into this category?
Turn to the Ran. That was the point I wanted to make. Turn to the Ran. Okay. So if the Ran, if you could turn to Yud Beis Amalaf Bedape Harif, the Ran is on the second wide line at the bottom. And I think this also addresses Jasmine's question. Let me see this Ran. Okay. Does the Chevra have a place yet in the Ran? We're good. Okay, so the Ran writes, Sircha de Gargashta. There's this white stuff that they would put on the ground of the sukkah. Says the Ran, it's not that the smell was putrid to everybody, because if the smell is putrid to everybody, so in that case, the sukkah is puzzled. Right? In other words, the Gemara said earlier that Shavsi Ushvartzeri, this is what Zoe was referencing. If you have like really bad smelling schach, you can't use it because since it smells so bad, people are going to run away and leave the sukkah. The Ran is assuming, based on this Gemara, that the Gemara in Yud Beis has said the Shavtzi and the Shvansari, whatever they are, that would make the sukkah absolutely puzzle. If something smells bad for everybody, the sukkah is not puzzle. In our Gemara, we're talking about not only this person is uncomfortable, but it's not something that bothers everybody. So the Ran has a shita that if something bothers everybody, that would invalidate the sukkah, that would make the sukkah puzzle. The Gemara, if you remember, had an expression earlier in the Masechta about Dira Srucha. Dira Srucha literally means a smelly dwelling place. In the context of the Gemara, over there, it meant a dwelling place like when there's stuff that's like hot hanging down from the sukkah, schach, and it might like bump me in the eyes. So the Gemara says that that's called a Dira Srucha. Most Rishonim understand that Dira Srucha is absolutely possible. The Rambam, and the Rambam happens to assume that Dira Srucha is not possible. Dira Srucha is a Din L'chatchila. L'chatchila, I'm not supposed to sit in a Dira Srucha because I'm going to be uncomfortable. Again, Dira Srucha, I could be uncomfortable because the stuff is coming down and hitting me in the face. Or I could be uncomfortable because it smells bad. In both instances, according to the Ran, if it's the type of thing that would make everybody uncomfortable, so then the sukkah is mamish puzzle. For the Rambam, the sukkah is not going to be puzzle. So for the Rambam, our Gemara is not really difficult. Right? When they have the sircha de gargishta, you have the bad smell. Right, so the Ran's kasha, I shouldn't the sukkah be puzzled, diras rucha. So the Rambam would say, no, it's not. There's no such thing as diras rucha actually being puzzled. That's the shita of the Rambam, which I think we discussed at some point in our youth. Okay, any questions on this?
Yeah, if this is like just something that I guess two questions. Questions here. One is that if this is just something that like makes you uncomfortable, but other people aren't, I'm curious, like, what level of subjectivity we're allowed to get to. Like, are there any standards for what is reasonable? And I think my second question is, if you're a mitzvah and you're a sukkah, but the, like, person who lives next door has a sukkah that, like, doesn't have that bad smell, like, you're putter from being in your sukkah, but are you putter from, like, sukkah at all for this meal now because you were mitzvah in your sukkah?
So the first question that you ask is, like, is there any objective bar for what's called mitzta'er? So I don't know if there's an objective bar, but the tour writes on this halacha that it has to be that it's the type of thing that other people are also uncomfortable with. If you have like a mishigas in your head, but no one else has it, it's like no one thinks like this, so then you're not a mitzta'er at all. Obviously, this case of the white cement or whatever it is, it's the type of thing that people say, yeah, it bothers her, but it doesn't bother me. Like people understand that it's annoying. But if it's something that no one understands as being annoying, people think, oh, like you're crazy if you're annoyed by that. So then that is not mitzta'er at all. I think that's the answer to the first question. I forgot already what the second question was though. The first question was, is there an objective bar? So the answer is that the Torah says yes, and there's no reason to assume that the Ran who says that I'm bothered by it, but it doesn't disturb the rest of the world, there's no reason to assume that the Ran is arguing on the Torah, because the Ran is just saying that I'm bothered by something. Others can understand why it's a nuisance, but they themselves could kind of go weiter. They could just suck it up and go on. That I think is a simple understanding of the Gemara, that there's no real machlokas ran and tor. But you had a second question.
Yeah, it was if something about your sukkah makes you mitzvah, do you have to find a different sukkah?
Yeah. So here's the issue. It really depends on the situation. Sometimes a person could be mitzvah because he or she has to go to someone else's sukkah. I'm comfortable in my own sukkah. I don't want to be in your sukkah. I want to be, so that itself could be a mitzta'er, right? Now, I'm not a mitzta'er if I set myself up. Like, I can't say that I live in Washington Heights, and by definition, I'm mitzta'er because the only sukkahs are communal sukkahs. It don't work like that, right? But it does work that if I set things up, that I have my own sukkah, and then me'ezah sibashahi, I don't want to go into your sukkah, so it could be I am pater, I'm a mitzta'er, I don't want to go into your sukkah. That certainly is possible, but it's hard to come up with absolute rules in these cases. There's a huge amount of subjectivity, which I think makes sense in this area of halacha. Tanya, how are you?
Yeah, hi. So I'm just thinking back to the Avel, the contrast with Mimela, that it comes from the sukkah itself, rather than something where he should just, you know, miyashev his das. So in terms of going to another sukkah, that sounds like it's more similar to the person should just get over it to something that's mamela, that's from the sukkah itself.
So I think may notice that Gemara says that Ibayla Yusube Daite, that you're an Avelos, but like take a deep breath and go on. So you're saying that being in someone else's sukkah
is a much less bigger deal, right?
It's much less of a big deal than being in Ovel. In Hachanami, the only thing is, like what we pointed out, most Rishonim understand that there's no Ptur of Mitzta'er if I'm going to be Mitzta'er everywhere. Right? So the Ovel, one of the challenges we had when we learned that Gemara is that if the Avelos is bothering you, you're going to be an Avelos whether you're at home or whether you're in the sukkah. So we spoke about how the Rush has an understanding of the Gemara that maybe I'm mitzta'er because other people are around, etc., and that enhances the tsar, something to that effect. But it is possible to conceive of a case that I'm mitzta'er by being in your sukkah. I don't think that itself is so troubling to me.
I think I have one and I'm curious because there was this communal sukkah near to me that I had planned to go to last year and didn't because it was too compressed. It was too many people in too small a space and this was still COVID and it didn't make me feel comfortable. So I'm curious to know if that would be part of this discussion.
Yes, I could hear that. I could hear someone who has different COVID standards saying, I'm mitzta'er by being with other people. That's something like the Sircha de Gargishta. Like, this bad smell or this COVID thing bothers me. Other people understand it. It happens not to be irksome to them, but right, that I totally understand. I could hear that as being a reasonable mitzta'er. Absolutely. Again, you have to know yourself, and you have to know, am I being honest to myself and to God, etc. Sometimes people look for excuses not to do mitzvos. That's really not proper. But if you genuinely are not going to go out in public because of COVID, etc. I think that's a very reasonable mahalach. Absolutely. Rachel Gutman posted a question. Can someone with allergies to schach or something else outdoors, are they putter because of mitzayir? I think the answer is yes. I think the answer is that it's very similar to the Sircha de Gargishta case. I have something that bothers me that might not bother. Everyone understands that somebody has allergies and is putter from sukkah. Yeah, I think that's me. That's exactly the point. Yeah, if I have allergies, I could be putter as a mitzayir, or right, I would say maybe if I have allergies, I'm putter as a chole. Right, but then I'm in an interesting situation because I'm only a chole over here. I'm not a chole over there. Right, so that's already that's a more detailed question. But the nafkamina is, I guess, other people. Right, if someone has hay fever and it doesn't bother them indoors, are other people also exempt from sukkah because they are attending the needs? It's like a wild idea. I'm attending to the needs of someone with a cold, and therefore I'm exempt from sukkah. Like, when you just process that, I think it's shocking. Tanya, looks like you have something to say.
I'm noticing Rachel first.
Oh, I was just going to ask that, or just clarify that this is both, their putter are from eating and sleeping.
Yes.
Okay.
We have not yet, again, first
so
of all,
people with allergies don't even have to do sukkahs. Okay. I mean, if it's that bad.
Yeah, correct. Your putter both from eating and sleeping, from everything. You are totally exempt from sukkah. Yes. Tanya?
Would they still be chayav to build a sukkah, though, even if they know that they're not going to use it? Isn't that a separate mitzvah?
Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting question. It's simple. There is a mitzvah of Chag HaSukkos Ta'as Elocha Shabbas Yomim. The Yerushalmi writes that there's a bracha that you make when you build a sukkah, because building a sukkah is a mitzvah. But the fact is, what Yerushalmi really says, the Nitziv explains, is that there's an idea that I recite a bracha on what's called the Hechsher Mitzvah Kosev B'kra. Right? The Torah, ordinarily I don't make a bracha on the Hechsher Mitzvah. The Hechsher Mitzvah, let's say I make a shofar for myself to blow. That's a Hechsher Mitzvah. I cut down a esrig. I don't make a bracha then, even according to Yerushalmi. By Sukkos, the Torah says, Chag HaSukkos Ta'as Elocha, so that's a Hechsher Mitzvah that the Torah mentions, so there you make a bracha. But a Hechsher Mitzvah is only significant because it leads to a mitzvah. The Pashto says that anything which is intended to lead to something else, if you're putter from the something else, you're putter from the anything. I know that sentence was totally awkwardly constructed, but if A is supposed to lead to B, and I'm putter from B, so l'cha'ora I'm putter from A also, although we do have certain examples in halacha. We have certain examples in halacha. Let's say an individual is not going to fast in Yom HaKippurim. The person is sick. Do they have a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? Right? So again, this depends on the nature of the mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Is it that Erev Yom Kippur's eating is like a Sudas Yontiv? Or is it that it's preparation on the assumption that eating on Erev Yom Kippur is preparation for Yom HaKippurim, so l'cha'or, if I am not going to fast in Yom Kippur, I am going to be putter from the preparation for it, right? That's how many understand, right, the Sefer HaChinuch, etc., that women are exempt from Parsha Zachar, because Parsha Zachar is a preparation for the real thing. The real thing is called going out to war and killing Amalek. Right? Women are exempt from going to war and killing Amalek, etc., so therefore they should also be exempt from Parsha Zachar, according to the Chinuch. Good. So that, I think, is the answer. There'd be no reason to build a sukkah if, I mean, I guess you could build a sukkah as chesed in case like some person's walking down the street and just needs a sukkah to sit in, but I don't think that's really a necessary thing. Okay, any other questions or comments on this? Tanya, did you start saying something in the
three points ago. It was just about when you had said when Misham Shehan, I was just wondering if we could apply the same parameters that we had done with Patra Mina Mitzvah. I mean, sorry, Osef B'Mitzvah. Sorry, in terms of if it's possible to do more than one and all of those, the different calculus that we had discussed there.
Yeah, absolutely. In other words, if Misham Shehem, if we're correct that Misham Shehem are putter because of Osek the Mitzvah, so then we have to go back to our machlokas between the round and the tosis and plug it in terms of the rules of Osek the Mitzvah, and it would probably make us dizzy, but that would probably be the correct way to learn the sugya. I think that
makes sense.
I should note that I was just reading a sefer before. Rabbi Eli Baruch Shulman is a Rosh Hashiva NYU. He has a sefer on sukkah, so I just picked it up to glance at it. So he makes the argument that Misham Shehachol are not putter based on Osek B'Mitzvah, but rather they're putter because they are considered tafel to the Cholah. They're part of like the same group. And just like the Chola is Pater, all of those attendants are Tafel to the Chola, and they are Pater. And he develops the idea that you can't be Tafel to something that has like no significance. And Mitzta'er, Mitzta'er isn't significant enough that you could be Tafel to the Mitzta'er. That's his argument. I didn't plan on saying this over because I don't fully understand it. I think it's a nice idea in the sense of it avoids our question as to whether there's a kiyum of Bikur Cholem for someone who has a mehush. I think that's what's nice about it. I just don't like the svara particularly that I'm part of like the same unit and the whole. A couple of years ago, one of my friends, his father was like very sick. His father actually was nifter shortly after Sukkot. So like the whole family was there for Sukkot. So he was asking me, like, could they have family meals together at home in the dining room? Or does each of them was like married with kids or whatever, each of them, should they each go out to the Sukkot and have their own small family meals? Or do I assume that they're all part of one unit of like Misham Shechol and they're all potter? So I thought that they're all potter. I thought actually, if anything, the father wanted his entire family around. And as a technical matter of halacha, they're all potter because Misham Shechol. And I think it's really Misham Shem in the sense of, you know, it's not like by Osek the Mitzvah, potter min mitzvah, if I could duck away, and I could say Kriya Shema when they have the line at the Levaya, and I could duck away and say Kriya Shema. So in that case, you know, other people could do the mitzvah. Over here, I think it's a little different because the father really wanted the whole family around. And the father was like struggling to kind of come down to the dining room or whatever. And he wanted his whole family there. And if each little unit is going to peel away for some of the time, that would take away that entire experience. But he was asking the Shiloh to everybody. I don't remember what he ended up doing. Okay, but that's my story. Okay, should we go on in Gemara? Is there a mitzvah to chesed for someone who's on the Chol HaMoed trip and needs a random sukkah? So as we discussed, to go on Chol HaMoed trips and be and exempt yourself from sukkah, go, as Rav Aaron pointed out, goes against the entire hashkafa of Torah that we want people to try to do mitzvos. So you should not try to assist people who are doing things that are wrong. Is that fair? Maybe. Okay. Zak the Gemara. Ocha machilas arai chutz sukkah. You eat achilas arai. Achilas arai means, I need a good translation for arai. The difference between arai and keva is not like, usually it means permanent versus not permanent. I think it means like significant. I think achilas arai is best translated, let's say, as a snack. You can have a snack outside of the sukkah. That's achilas arai. So the Gemara says, v'kam achilas arai, Rav Yosef tarte otzlas be'i, two or three eggs. Two or three eggs is considered achilas arai, which Rashi says that, Rashi actually has a different girsa. Instead of tarte otzlas be'i, Rashi says that the girsa is two or three morsels. Something that you put in your mouth two or three times. You see that here? Tosis tarti utlas. Tosis points this out. Pirish hakuntris. Shtayim o shalosh pa'amim yitin atoch piv morsel belaz. I assume that morsel is like what we would call a morsel.
Also, right? It's the word in French. It still is. Morsel.
Okay. It's good to have one Canadian here. Thank you. So it's a real word. Okay. The Yesam Shikasabahan Tartiutflas Bei Vako Echad. There are other texts that have two or three eggs, and Taisa says it's all the same. It ends up being the same. Etc. Right? We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But basically, Tosis is saying that two or three morsels ends up being like two or three eggs. Tosis is translating a morsel as an egg. Right now. What does that mean? So it probably means, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, that how much food do you stick in your mouth? If you just like put your hand in the cookie jar and you just like stick cookies in your mouth, how much cookies will you stick in your mouth? So the answer is probably an egg. That's why Tosis is saying it. So two or three morsels equals two or three eggs because a Talmudic morsel is an egg. That's the way Tosis is putting the sugya together. And Tosis is saying that this is how Rashi understands, etc. We'll talk about this in a few minutes. Okay, so achilas arai. Yeah.
I have a question. Is this to do with quantity or the amount of time it takes you to eat it? Because I know elsewhere in the Gemara, there's a discussion of it takes, you should eat your matzah within the time it would take.
That's a really important question. Meseches Sukkah talks about achilas keva versus achilas arai. The pashtus of the understanding is that I can eat a snack outside of the sukkah because at home I'll eat a snack outside of my house. I'm going to come home to eat a meal, but I'll munch on something at work. I'll buy a candy bar or something. That's a achilas arai. Nowhere in Maseches Sukkah do we give the ordinary definition of kedei achilas pras. Right? Ordinarily, we assume in halacha that that to be chayav, let's say, in Birkas HaMazon, you have to have min hatayre kedei seviyah, midrabbonin, you have to have a kezayis b'chdei achilas pras, no? Right? An olive size within the amount of time it takes to eat like half a loaf of bread, etc. Right? Which is a range of like 2 minutes until 9 minutes, the kedei achilas pras. Right? This is relevant for cholam and yom hakipurim. How long do you have to break between bites or between small things? Not actually bites, but how long you have to break between each eating. So the assumption is kedei achilas pras is the breaking time in halacha, which is 2 minutes to 9 minutes. The Chachma Shlomo on Shulchan Aruch says that nowhere in Maseches Sukkah do we see Kedei Achilas Pras, and therefore in Maseches Sukkah the issue is only quantity. And I think it makes a lot of sense because I'm at work. I'm not going to eat a meal. I'm going to go home to eat my meal. But sometimes when I go home, I'm like really tired. And eating the meal can take a really long time. And I'm not going to eat nice and slowly and I'll surf the web while I'm eating and whatever I'm doing. It's going to take me a lot of time to eat sometimes. But I wouldn't do that. It's a meal. And I wouldn't have that in the office. So the Chochma Shlomo's point, I think, resonates with me. Although I should point out that in the deer shoe, the Mishnah Berurah with like the deer shoe, all the poskim from today, they quote that everyone assumes that it has to be within Kedei Achilas Pras. They quote that. Who is it? I don't remember who it is. The Sefer Shi'urei Torah, I think that's the stapler. The Bikurei Yaakov, they all say that the din is based on Kedei Achilas Pras, and therefore you have to have this amount of food within that set amount of time. Their understanding is that less than, if I eat food spread out more than Kedei Achilas Pras, that is not considered Achila at all in Halacha. And therefore, I can't be chayiv in sukkah because I'm not doing anything. I'm not eating. Right? The alternative approach is that, no, it is called achila. The only thing is that it's not the type of achila that is mitztaref to a shir and is going to be chayiv on Yom Kippur, or it's not a type of achila that could be a kiyum of the mitzvah of matzah, right, for this time of year. But this question is a relevant question in other areas of halacha as well. Like we spoke about Yom HaKippurim, on Yom Kippur, you can't eat any tiny amount. Chati shir is aser min haTorah. A full shir, you're chayiv for. Chati shir is a din d'oraisa, that it's aser, but you don't get an onesh. You don't get any punishment. There are Rishonim who understand that Rabbi Elchanan writes in that Gemara in Yuma Daf Ayin Gimel that Chatzi Shir is not even called Achila. That's like a striking explanation. The fact that it's Aser Min HaTorah means it's Aser because you're getting some sort of benefit, whatever it is, or the Torah says it's, or like the Gemara says it's Aser because it's Chazi L'Tzirufei. You might combine the various chatzi shears to get to a full shear, but the fact is, chatzi shear is not considered achila according to that Rabbi Elchanan. That would be along the lines of what the majority opinion in the Svarim says, that if you eat a whole huge amount of food, but you're eating it tiny bit by tiny bit by tiny bit, you are going to be exempt from sukkah. That's what the Bikurei Yaakov, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, they say that the din of Kedei Achilas Pras, which does not appear in this Gemara, is still relevant for sukkah. Against that Chochma Shlomo, which is the approach that I myself felt made more sense. So that was a long answer for what was a relatively short question. Good? So let's get back to the Gemara. Zot the Gemara. You could eat Achilas HaRaya outside of a sukkah. Kamachilas Arai, so if Yosef says two or three eggs, right, or two or three morsels, according to the other texts in the Gemara, fine. So Amalaya Baya. The Zimnin Sagiyan, Sagi Leila Inish Bahachi, Bahavalay Sudas Keva. Abaya says, oftentimes that amount of food satisfies a person, and therefore becomes Achilas Keva. Abaya is coming from the perspective that the difference between achilas arayin and achilas keva, the difference between a meal and a snack, is that a meal fills me. A snack holds me over until the next meal. Right? It's a very different, like, tonight I come home, right? I have a snack. 45 minutes later, I have dinner. Right? The snack is not a full meal. It's not there to fill you up. So that's Abaye's kasha. Abaye asks, but oftentimes a person is satisfied with that amount, with the two or three eggs, whatever it is. So therefore it is keva. Therefore it becomes a meal. It's not a snack. Ela amar Abaye, v'tum bar bei rav, v'ayol l'kala. Abaye has a different approach. Abaye says it's like the amount that a yeshiva student will eat right before he goes into shiur. There are certain rebbeim who tend to, I don't know anyone like this, who tend to go overtime. And you know, the students are going to be like, one second, you know, Rebbe's starting shiur. I better get something in because you never know when it's going to end. Right? One time in one of the yeshivas that I was in a particular shiur that the Rebbe was known for finishing late, so much so that the Chadar Ochel, I just gave it away, that the Chadar Ochel would prepare an extra meal, like, for the latecomers. In other words, there would be like a second shift of food that came out for us because our shiur finished later. This, again, in that case, you know how long Rebbe is going to go. But if you don't know, so then you're going to just take a bite to hold you over. That is called achilas arai. That's called achilas arai. K'detom bar bei rav, v'ayo l'kala. Both Rashi and Tosfos say that what this means is a kibetza. One egg worth is considered achilas arai. More than an egg is called achilas keva. Yoser mikabetza is achilas keva. An egg itself is achilas arai. And Tosfos says, here, if we go back to the Tosfos where we were up to, right, Rashi first has the text two or three morsels. Tosfos says the other text in the Gemara is two or three eggs. Va'kol echad, and they're all the same. Kedemuch kaman gabe lemet have a tiyufte derav Yosef. Okay, Abaye. It's going to be clear in the Gemara later on that it's the same amount, morsels and eggs, etc. Deshir based hablia kibetza. It's all the same because the base hablia, the throat can hold an egg worth of food. Ubasof masik in the term sober abanon, va'azalakala, later on we say, the amount that young Talmud Chacham eats when he goes to Shiur, Shazem Melo Piv, Nahainu Kibetza. This is what fills up your mouth, which is a kibetza. And then Taisa says that this amount is true only by bread, because fruit does not need a sukkah at all. Meaning, if I'm going to eat a kibetza of bread, I do not need a sukkah. If I'm going to eat a truck full of fruit, I do not need a sukkah. If I eat more than a kibetza of bread, I do need a sukkah. Fruit never requires a sukkah. By definition, fruit is not something of kvius. Bread is something of kvius.
On a kibetza? You don't bench on a kibetza of bread?
You bench technically on more than a kizayis of bread.
So that seems like a...
But it doesn't...
It seems weird to bench outside of the sukkah.
It seems weird to bench again. So this is what the Gemara in Brachas writes, that, you know, Klal Yisrael goes above and beyond. Hashem like praises them. That I say you only chayiv to bench for achalta v'savata, and they bench even on a kizayis. Okay, that's what we do. You don't make the bracha of al netilas yadayim if you wash for hamotzi unless you're going to eat a kibetza worth. That's like a halacha in tumen tahara, etc. But Birkas HaMazon you make on a kizayis. One, I did when I was in Smicha, so I went with my chavrusa to the pizza place across from YU, and we spoke to the pizza maker to figure out how much. So the thing about pizza slices, I don't know if you ever noticed, my kids noticed like a long time ago, they're completely unequal. So like sometimes you can't, it's not like, it shouldn't be so hard. You cut the pie into eight little slices. If it would be equal 8 slices. So each slice of pizza would not have a kibbetzah of flour. That would mean if you eat one slice of pizza, you should wash for hamotzi, but not say on the tilos yadayim. If you eat two slices, then you say on the tilos yadayim when you wash. Again, I'm coming from a perspective that pizza is always hamotzi food, and you always that's the baseline assumption that I'm beginning with. Okay, so basically, what Tysus is saying is as follows: one kibbetzah is considered achilas arai, and the proof that Tysus has is because your base habliya can hold a kibbetzah worth of food. According to the majority shita in Rishonim, a beitzah equals two kazesim. That's why the Trumas Hadashin quotes in the Mordechai that the proper way to fulfill the mitzvah achilas matzah is you put two kazesim of matzah in your mouth, because you're not sure are you fulfilling the mitzvah of the top matzah or the bottom matzah. You put them both in your mouth, and then you swallow them together. Look, it's like the python, no? Like, just goes right down. That's the way, that's the simple understanding of the Trumas Hadesh and the Mordechai. The problem is if you try to eat this way, a few things. First of all, that's not a normal way to eat. Most of us don't eat by, like, chewing the food in our mouth and then like, you know, like, going down. It's like a very weird way to eat. So we could argue that that might not be considered a normal way of eating, and therefore you're not making the mitzvah of matzah that way. But one other thing I see from this Gemara, though, is that if Tosfos is saying that the beis habliya, that I could swallow a kibbetzah, I could swallow two kazeisim, so by definition, my kazayis has to be pretty small. If you are into, I don't know, are any of you guys into this, like, I remember as a kid, at one point in my life, I tried to be like very frum. I had like this big chart of how large the matzah has to be to fulfill the mitzvah of achilas matzah. Have you ever seen these things? Tanya's seen it. It's around. So the Chazon Ish shear of a kazayis is, well, I think the standard shear is that kazayis is around 0.9 fluid ounces. The Chazon Ish shear ends up being like 2.2 fluid ounces. Right? In other words, if I would take the, let's say, bread or matzah in this case, and squeeze it, compress it, and put it in a shot glass, right? A shot glass is around 1 fluid ounce, right? So the Chazon Ish shear would be like 2 shot glasses. Now, that's 1 kazayis. That would mean that 2 kazesim before shot glasses. Okay, do not try this because you're going to end up going to the hospital if you did. But try to put 4 shot glasses of matzah in your mouth at the same time, chew it up, and then in one gulp, swallow all of it. Right? You are probably not going to make it out alive. So the only way to understand this din, that the beis habliya can hold a kibbetzah, is if you have a small kazayis and consequently a small beitzah. How large is a kazayis? So Rabbi Dr. Natan Slifkin on his Rationalist Judaism blog, whatever, so he says, this is a shear of a kazayis. He has a picture of an olive. Well, on some level, that's deceiving because there are 7 different grades of olives that they sell in the United States. We have, which olive is it? A medium-sized olive. Well, some olives are like so tiny, they don't do anything with them. Right? Some olives are like so, yeah. What exactly is the eggs? You can't even talk about size of eggs because our chickens, the chickens that produce eggs are, again, we don't want to talk about the conditions that they raise the chickens in when they produce the eggs. I'm not going there, but suffice it to say, they raise the chickens to make eggs, which are larger than they would be ordinarily. right? If you buy jumbo eggs, for sure you're buying eggs that are modified. The grade A eggs or something are larger than what eggs would be naturally. There are lots of eggs in industry that they're much smaller. It's very hard to know exactly what the size of an olive and an egg is. The Rishonim all work with like measurements based on the thumbs. This is what led to the famous experiment with the Neid Behuda. That the Neid Behuda, the Gemara says that a Revius is two etzba'os by 2.7 etzba'os. All the Shurim are connected. The Revius is connected because everything it connects. The Neid Behuda says, I tried to do it and it didn't work. So his Talmud, Rebbe Elazar Flakel, says it didn't work because everybody who knew Rebbe, who knew Neid Yehuda, realized the man had gigantic thumbs. But the biggest mystery in Judaism, I don't know the biggest mystery, the pashtus is, the minhag of Klal Yisrael has always been that we use smaller shiurim. And the smaller shiurim have a raya from this Gemara, that the Beis Habli is machzik kebetza, it only makes sense if you have a small kezayis. The smallest, a kezayis is probably 1/10 of a machine matzah. That's probably the size of a kezayis. I just gave a shiur about this today with my guys, people who are, people who have like celiac disease or gluten intolerant to different levels. So what do they do for achilas matzah? So the ordinary suggestion is eat oat matzah. Well, oat matzah is questionable because it's very questionable whether oats are the chameshes mine dagam. Professor Felix argues that oats did not exist in Eretz Yisrael in the time of the Mishnah. Oats are not a species of barley. Oats can't be one of the chameshes mine dagam. So if oats don't work, so what are your options if you're gluten intolerant? So the best option might be to just eat a tiny, tiny bit of matzah and get the mitzvah. And, right, you technically don't have to eat 5 kezesim to be yotzei the mitzvah at the Seder. We do. We have 2 kezesim at Motzi Matzah, 1 at Korvech, 2 at Afikomen. Technically, the Mishnah says, Hashem Hashachot kezayis is yotzah. 1 kezayis is enough. So if you could get down 1/10 of a machine matzah, you fulfill your mitzvah minatayah. And I think it is possible that 1/5 of a machine matzah, because according to my advanced mathematics, 2 1/10 equals 1/5, that 1/5 of a machine matzah, you might be actually able to swallow in one shot. I think that all works out. It makes sense to use smaller shiurim. My general approach is as follows. It says in Shulchan Aruch, you're supposed to eat 2 kezesim by achilas matzah, right? What I try to do is eat 2 kezesim, not the smallest size kezesim, but 2 relatively small kezesim that ends up equaling 1 large kezayis. In case the Chazon Ish, let's say, is right, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, so I'm supposed to eat 2. So I'll eat 2 of the small ones that equals 1 of the big ones. And that way I can have my cake and eat it. But it's potato starch cake, so it doesn't taste good. That's the basic idea. Okay, any questions or comments on this? Rachel, how are you?
We were bringing up kezayis just as an example of another shiur, because
the majority of Rishonim assume that a kebetza is 2 kezayisim.
Right.
There are 2 olives and an egg.
Okay.
Right, next time you crack an egg, right, look for the 2 olives. They are there. You just have to know where to find them. Some assume that there are 3 olives and an egg. Yeah.
And if we were, the point you were making that we have to assume they were able to fit this entire morsel in their mouth and swallow it, that doesn't sound like the eggs I know. So is that is that like a different?
So I think our eggs are considerably larger than their eggs used to be. That's why I think we have to have smaller shiurim. I think the fact that the Balei HaTosfos is right, that the Beis Habliya, that I could swallow a kibitza at one time, that indicates that the kibitza ain't that big. You have to remember also that people used to be smaller than they are today, no? Just go to any museum, like the home, say that I think people are smaller. again, this same issue of like the measurements not working out, it comes up in Hilchos Mikvos. Also, they tell you that the size of mikvah is 44,000 thumbs, which is supposed to equal 40 sa'ah. 40 sa'ah is supposed to be the amount of water that a person can fit in. The numbers are totally off. Totally. The same kasha Nevi Yehuda had, the Tash Bates had a couple of hundred years before him. The numbers just don't add up. If I measure with the thumbs and then I measure what it's supposed to equal, it don't work, right? In Hilchos Challah, it doesn't work. In Hilchos Mikvais, it doesn't work. It just, the numbers don't work out. So Lamaisa, what do? The minig in Yerushalayim always was to use what we call Reb Avram Chaim Noz Shiurim, which are the smaller Shiurim. That's always been the minhag. It's relevant, you know, you take off challah. So some people say you only take off challah when you have five pounds. No? Five. Is that right? Yeah, I think that's what they say, 5 pounds of flour. The correct answer is that no, it's like 3 pounds of flour. If you, the Lubavitchers get it right. Reb Avram Chaim Noz is a Lubavitcher. So in the spice and spirit of Jewish cooking, which was like everyone's grandmother or mother, depending on how old you are, had that cookbook, the spice and spirit of Jewish cooking, they give you the measurement of challah as being 3 pounds or so. That's exactly correct. That's Reb Avram Chaim Noz Shiurim. Right? When they say that you should only take off challah when you have 5 pounds, is definitely wrong. If you want to be super firm, you can take off challah from 3 pounds and not make a bracha. But we make a bracha on the small shiurim, everything. You make a bracha, your hadasim, right? If you have the small shiur of the tefachim, that's what we do. Most people don't buy the hadasim, the chazan, the shiur. We pask in like the smaller shiurim. By a mikvah, the minhag in the communities has always been that we want to be yotzei kohen to everybody. So we build our mikvahs much larger than they have to be. But the smaller shiurim are correct, lahalacha. I think, am I making my opinion clear? Okay.
I'm confused because we're saying 2 or 3 kibbetzot is constituting a snack. But yeah. Well,
the original approach in the Gemara is that 2 or 3 kibbetzim, 2 or 3 eggs is a snack. Okay. Gemara says, no, that can't be. That fills people up. Rather, a snack is 1 kibbetzot. That I could tell sobim rabbanan ba'ol obey, whatever, right? When the student takes that small amount and just runs into shiur, that's 1 beitza. That's the maskan, and that's the conclusion of Taisa. So 1 beitza is a snack.
That's still surprising because that's how much it takes to be chiyuv. Oh, no, we do 2 kibbetza beitzim in the sukkah. When you're sitting in the sukkah, how much?
If it's an achilas sarai, I'm not chayiv in sukkah if I eat 1 kibbetza. I am chayiv in sukkah if I eat more than a kibbetza of bread. Right? 1 kibbetza of bread, I'm not chayiv in sukkah. More than 1 kibbetza of bread, I am chayiv in sukkah. That's the maskan of our Gemara. That's how we pass in the Shulchan Arasim and Tafresh Lamitasif base.
And you can ask the question again of maybe you'll get filled from 1 beitza.
So apparently it doesn't work like that. People didn't get filled from 1 beitza, apparently. I don't know. Okay. Chevra, next week already, I think Thursday night is Bedikas Chametz. We're not learning. The week after that, Thursday night is Chol HaMoed. We're not going to be learning. We'll pick up again after Yontif. Rachel, yes.
Just going back to Mitzvah case, it was really the same question that Jasmine was asking. If it's a subjective Mitzvah, and even if it's what you were, some Rishon on something on the Shulchan Aruch was saying, it has to be something that everybody can agree to. So right. I'm pretty sure most people, I don't know.
Everyone would understand as being a reasonable source of Mitzvah. I think that's how I was trying
to. So could you not make the argument that sleeping in the sukkah at all is a reasonable source of discomfort?
Did you ever go camping?
I mean, I'm not for me, but there are some people who wouldn't have gone camping.
Most people.
I'm a Sternberg girl. So like this is, you know, this is enjoyable.
Yeah, my sister's been Sternberg for like the last 30 years, but that's a different story. I think.
But everyone usually goes, oh, that's people, crazy. People it's so unenjoyable.
People understand that sleeping out in a tent is a normal thing to do. I'm not.
It's still mitzdaer.
If I'm mitzdaer, genuinely okay. But most people are not. Most people enjoy their camping trips and when they go out in the tent.
So people, but someone can really have room to say, for me, subjectively, I would never go near the ground if I'm lying horizontally on it or something like that.
Theoretically, you could make that argument. It's not, again, I think you have to be honest, you know, in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Like, am I really mitznai or am I not? I think that's the idea. Okay, Chevra, you should have a great night and a wonderful Chag Kosher Sameach, a good Yantiv, and all the best. Kol Tov.